From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Noah Adams. Tomorrow, Attorney General John Ashcroft appears before an increasingly restive Senate Judiciary Committee. Members, both Republican and Democrat, have criticized the administration for changing established legal procedures in the aftermath of September 11th without consulting Congress. NPR's Nina Totenberg has the report.
No one can dispute the profound effect on the nation of the World Trade Center attack. Indeed, as Assistant Attorney General Michael Chertoff told the Senate Judiciary Committee last week, the threat is so great that the president is implementing extraordinary powers given him under the Constitution.
I think what he's done here is simply taken all of those tools out of the constitutional cupboard, so to speak, and now laid them on the table so that he has them all available.
Critics, however, see that statement as a distortion. NYU law professor Bert Newborn.
The purpose of the Constitution is to shield individuals from inappropriate governmental power. The Constitution is not a sword, not in our society. The Constitution is not a device to empower the government to engage in wholesale arrests, secret military trials, eavesdropping on attorney-client. It is not a sword that allows the government to go around and simply alter the rules of justice.
This is a debate as old as the nation. Alexander Hamilton, writing in the Federalist Papers, said the federal government's power to provide for the common defense, quote, exists without limitation. The circumstances that endanger the safety of nations are infinite, he said, and for this reason, no constitutional shackles can wisely be imposed on the power to which the care of it is committed. But James Madison, also writing in the Federalist Papers, declared, quote, the accumulation of all powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary, in the same hands may justly be pronounced the very definition of tyranny. Similarly today, President Bush has justified many of the extraordinary steps he's taken as necessary for the national security, while his critics say that these measures, done with the stroke of a pen, without consulting Congress, and seeking to avoid judicial review, violate the essence of our Constitution and its separation of powers. First, there are the detainees, 608 currently behind bars, and all but 55 of them held on what are called immigration-related charges. The Attorney General has refused to make public their names or the charges. In Orlando yesterday, President Bush defended their treatment.
All of them in America are entitled to a lawyer. All of them in America are entitled to make phone calls. We're the freest society in the world.
And Ashcroft on Fox News Sunday this weekend went further.
No person who is being held in the United States is being held in secret. They can all contact their lawyers, they can contact their families, they can announce their detentions.
Critics like Professor Newborn mock such descriptions as preposterous.
A suggestion that it's easy to make your name public from inside the walls of the Manhattan House of Detention when your family doesn't even know where you are is extraordinary, and where your national consulate doesn't know where you are.
As to the notion that detainees can contact anyone they want, witnesses before the Senate Judiciary Committee this week testified that simply is not true. Detainees held for weeks or even months have said they were given one call a week. Lawyers have said that when contacted by families, they couldn't find their clients for days or weeks. And in New York, detainees were routinely given a list of organizations that could supply lawyers, except that 13 of the organizations didn't have lawyers. And one, the Legal Aid Society of New York, didn't have working telephones because of the September 11th Trade Center attack. Another item involving detainees that's gotten little attention is that the Justice Department is now refusing to release detainees even when an immigration judge has found that the government has produced no evidence to justify keeping them in custody, not even a minor violation of immigration law. The department maintains it has the right to hold the detainees while the government appeals. Attorney General Ashcroft's decision to allow detainees conversations with their lawyers to be monitored is not unprecedented, except for one thing. In the past, the department has always asked the permission of a judge first. This time, it's claiming it has the right to make such decisions on its own. Perhaps no action has caused as much criticism as President Bush's order creating military tribunals to try accused terrorists or those who may, quote, harbor them. President Bush.
They are unlawful combatants who seek to destroy our country and our way of life. And if I determine that it is in the national security interest of our great land to try by military commission those who make war on America, then we will do so.
Although administration officials have sought to portray the Bush order as limited, and although later regulations could narrow the order, the actual language of the decree is extremely broad. Eugene Fidel is president of the National Institute of Military Justice.
There's no express provision for a judge. The members of the military commission serve both as judge and jury. There's no requirement for proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Indeed, there's not even a requirement that the government bear the burden of proof. There's no express presumption of innocence. There's no provision for review in a higher court. There's no clear provision for the right to a public trial.
Nor is there any provision for a unanimous verdict, even in a death penalty case. Attorney General Ashcroft notes accurately that the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of military commissions to try Nazi saboteurs in World War II. But that was during a declared war, and in this case, the president has not sought a formal declaration of war. Military justice expert Fidel is sure of only one thing. The Bush order on military commissions will get to the Supreme Court if it is actually used in any case.
How it would come out, I think, is very, very unclear at the moment, because our most recent experience with military commissions was in the context of a declared war.
The tribunal issue is, in a particular way, symbolic of the ongoing debate. Why, senators asked last week, did the administration simply create these tribunals by executive fiat? Why didn't the Attorney General come to Congress to work out a procedure? NYU law professor Burt Newborn.
Ashcroft, and as far as I know, the president, has made a decision that all of the important judgments are going to be made inside the executive branch by a very small set of people reporting directly to John Ashcroft. Those are decisions which in a democracy can't be made by a small group of law enforcement officials. Those are decisions that have to be made with the cooperation of Congress. That's what the Constitution requires.
The answer from the administration is that when it comes to the national defense, that is the power that the Constitution specifically reserves for the president. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
And there's more coverage of this issue on our website, npr.org.